Well, hello there, and welcome back to the Showing Up to Your Life podcast and YouTube channel. I don't know if it seems different to you, but it's very, very different for me right now. I am actually recording this video at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is completely unusual for me, but I just wanted to share something with you. I just had the opportunity to meet one of the people who I get to meet every week online. You know, it's one of these people, I for lack of a better word, I'm going to say clients, but you know that I'm trying to search for some other word that is more meaningful and more accurate to how I feel, because the people with whom I work, it's not a client's vendor kind of relationship. It is truly a heart-to-heart relationship. It's a heart-connected relationship. And so, but what happened today was this person who lives in a different town from me, let's call him K, okay? I want to respect privacy and stuff, but anyway, Kay lives in a completely different state, and we have met, you know, for a little over a year now, every week on the computer. And so today he happens to be in Denver, so we had a face-to-face meeting, and it was amazing. Oh my gosh, I hope I can do that with everybody, all of you. It was so great to actually meet the physical person that I just see as this, you know, representative of electrons in this computer screen up until now. And so this is one of the reasons why I'm recording this video so late. Not that there's a problem with that, there isn't, it's okay, I'm just kind of letting you know. But yeah, it was. It's an amazing thing, you know, when you know you get to know somebody online, and then you get to actually meet them one day, and it's just such a fascinating dynamic that happens. And so we just had the most wonderful conversation. We actually took more like, I don't know, 2 hours or something like that in this meeting over a cup of tea. It was really, really splendid. So I'm just kind of, you know, sharing that with you because it just filled me with joy today, and I'm just so excited about it. And so if any of you are ever in Denver, okay, we can do a face-to-face meeting, and I would love to, okay? We can meet at a coffee shop. We meet in a park, whatever. I can even clean up my office. We can meet right here if you wanted to, okay? And so keep that in mind. If you're ever in the neighborhood, let me know, okay? But here we are. I'm here with you. Happy to be here with you. Excited as usual. And so today is the day that a few of you have been waiting for. Because I did get a handful of people to respond to my offer the other day, where I said that if you all want to hear some of the stories of my own, you know, childhood trauma, I'm willing to share them, but only if you ask, okay? And I set a mark. I think I said 10 people would be the threshold. I didn't reach 10, okay? But the people who did respond, okay, specifically a couple of the people who responded, not everyone, but a few of the people, specifically a couple of them, are people with whom I have worked for a while now, or, you know, had worked in the past with, you know, as a coach, right? And so these people have shared with me their traumas and their you know, stories of their trauma from their childhood, right? And so, you know, things that happened to them and the ways in which it has affected, you know, their here and now. And a lot of that has to do with why, or a lot of that is the reason why we came to work with each other, right? Because people come to this work not usually because everything is just awesome in their lives, right? People come to this work because they're struggling with stress, or they're struggling with depression or anxiety or all of the above, right? in whatever capacity, you know, people are looking for something to help them to live life in a more meaningful, a more enjoyable, and a more healthy way. And so a lot of that includes, you know, the trauma that we've dealt with as kids, right? And so to honor those people, and to, you know, even though we didn't meet 10, you know, as I said, I think it was like 4 that we met, so we didn't even give it halfway there, right? But it's not like we just missed, you know, but because the specific people, specifically 2-3 of the people actually who responded that they would like to hear my story, they're people who have opened up to me in the past and have shared truly deep and in often ways, you know, in many ways, you know, difficult and even painful, you know, aspects of their own experience as children. And so to honor them, I'm going to share my story a little bit here and just a few things. You know, it's not, you know, there's only so much you can share in 25 minutes that I have left in my sort of unofficial 30-minute cutoff here, which all of you know is a very soft cutoff. But anyway, first of all, I want to just a couple of like kind of caveats, disclaimers, trigger alerts. Number one, you don't have to watch this. Okay, I'm about to tell you three or four stories of my childhood, which were really uncomfortable and really not, you know, it's not good stuff. It's not happy stuff I'm about to share. Okay, that brings me to point number two. I want you to know that I really don't want to do this. Okay, and I want you to know that because it's probably not going to come off that way. Right, because I've practiced talking about myself, talking about things, talking into this camera. You know, I'm practiced at it. Okay, so it might come off as though there's not a care in the world and this is just rolling off the tip of my tongue like it's nothing. It's not true. Okay, this is a deep struggle for me, and I want you to know that because because if you see me just talking about this, and you might think, well, if Art can speak so freely and easily about his trauma, why do I struggle with mine so much? I want you to know I am struggling. Okay, I am. This is very difficult for me to do. Okay. Third, what I'm about to share with you are some stories that are really subjective to me, right? These are my experiences, right? Now, in a lot of ways, in right up until today, you know, I have felt that my trauma is not that big a deal. Right? Like that's how I grew up feeling. Like it's not that bad. You don't have the right to be that, you know, bothered by it, that hurt by it, so on and so forth. Right. And to be sure, the three people who have shared their own childhood experiences, right, who have asked me to share mine here, right? The people who I know who have shared their experiences with me, they've had much more difficult experiences than me, for sure. Like way more difficult. But that's the thing about trauma, right? My trauma isn't less for me just because it was not as severe as what somebody else suffered, okay? And I need you to know that for yourself, because whatever you experience, even if it was, you know, even if your trauma only got to the point of how often you were allowed to eat ice cream as a kid, right? Picking a silly example, of course, but if that is your trauma, then that is your trauma. And it doesn't make, you know, just because my trauma might seem worse or more difficult, it doesn't take away from the experience that you had, right? Trauma is just like every other aspect of our lives is a subjective experience. Right? And there's a felt texture to our lives, right? Like how you feel is how you feel. I could never understand how you feel fully, and I could never feel how you feel fully, nor could you ever feel me, feel the way I feel or understand my feelings on a truly, you know, you can't, nobody can understand it except me. Just like nobody can understand you and your trauma and all the difficulties and the pain and suffering that it caused you. Nobody can feel that except you. Nobody can know that except you. Nobody can understand that except you. This is a very important point because, like I said, growing up, I never thought I had it that bad. You know, my parents were, you know, aside from the abusive stuff that I'm about to tell you here, you know, they were loving parents, like loving in the sense that they took care of me, right? Like I always had enough food to eat. I always had enough, you know, I always had the toys that I wanted. I always, you know, I got the air hockey table in my bedroom when I was, you know, 8 years old or something like that. You know, in many ways, I had many more things than a lot of other people did, right? And so for me, my felt texture of my subjective experience was that, you know, how traumatic could it have been, right? Because of all this stuff that happened that was positive. And that's how trauma can be very tricky, okay? And again, just in the same sense that it's, you know, we can't compare our own trauma to the trauma of someone else because it's such a relative term, the same thing applies, right? Just because somebody showered me with love and materials and all that stuff does not mean that that person could not also traumatize me, Okay. So I'm hoping that if you do watch this, that you, you know, maybe this is going to make you feel about some of your trauma as a kid. And I want you to understand that your trauma is valid. Okay. Whether it's way worse than what I'm about to say or way less difficult, less extreme, whatever, it's still valid. Nothing can ever take away the validity of your trauma and every experience that you've ever had in your life. It is valid. It matters. It is important. And you deserve every bit of compassion from yourself and from others as it relates to your trauma. Now, one last thing, and this is probably the most important thing, okay? My job as a coach is not to help people with their trauma, right? That is not something that I'm trained to do. I mean, I've read a lot of books and stuff, but I do not have a degree, right? I do not have the training to help people through their trauma, okay? So I'm about to share some stories with you, okay? But this is very important. If you're struggling, I need you to seek help, okay? You know, this can become a very, very dangerous thing, very damaging, very difficult thing to go through on your own, okay? So the practices that I talk about here, right, and the ideas that I give you and the thoughts that I go through here, right, they are meant to deal with the from right now forward, right? I give you the tools to handle life right now. My work is not about going back and making sense of the trauma. It's very, very valuable to go back and make sense of your trauma. Okay, now some people feel comfortable doing that through a series of journaling practices and just self-reflection, which this work will enable some of that, right? But for a lot of people, for the majority of people who is suffering from childhood trauma, it takes more than that. Okay, it takes a trained professional. So please, if you need help finding a trained professional, I can help you with that, okay? But please don't look at this as a substitute for that, okay? Now, all that said, where do I even begin? Now, first of all, before we go any further, before I even tell you the stories here that I'm reluctantly going to tell you, it's important also to understand that, you know, trauma is not the experience that we have, right? Like the thing that happens is not the trauma. The trauma happens after the thing. Specifically, trauma is dependent on or impacted by or created by how you were able to process the experience you had. Okay. And in a lot of cases, what that means is what kind of support did you have to get through this? Right. And this is an interesting thing. I'm going to tell you, it's going to come back to this in a minute, in a few minutes at the end. I'm going to tell you how, you know, even some experiences that are very less violent can be less trauma. It can be more traumatizing than something that's an ultimately very violent experience. And I'm going to tell you about that because I have both in my experience. Okay. So now, first of all, it's very important to understand that. Well, it's important to understand for in the context of my trauma that, pardon me, my father left us on the morning that my little sister was born. Okay. That's when my father walked out of our lives, okay? He eventually came back, and he was never fully out of our lives. It was always this weird, like, he was like the authoritarian disciplinarian, right? So, oh, wait till your father hears about this on this weekend when you see him. He's going to, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Which made for a very confusing experience. And this was traumatizing in and of itself, of course. I mean, abandonment is a huge source of trauma, right? But again, the way in which my father did this, right? Leaving on the morning my sister was born, that obviously was not a class move right there, you know? But also there was never any like, hey, let's talk about what's going on, right? There was never that support. And so therefore, you know, just because two people break up does not have to equal trauma, right? There are millions of divorced couples out there who are like, I have a friend who recently divorced her partner and they have two kids. And what she describes is that they're a family living in separate houses, right? And that's the difference between a traumatizing experience of divorce or separation and a non-traumatizing, you know, example, experience of divorce or separation, right? So I tell you that because, you know, maybe you're thinking about divorce. Maybe you're thinking about how do I get out of this? And maybe one of the things that's keeping you from making a decision is how it's going to impact your children. These are all beautiful things to consider. But remember that it's not a zero-sum game, right? You can leave. You can make things okay with you and still support your children through the process, right? Is it ideal? No, of course it's not. But what in life is, right? There's no perfect, right? So here I am stalling. I feel like I'm just trying not to tell you the story. So let me just go ahead. Okay, so... All right. So my earliest memories of the traumatizing impact that my mother had, and this is really going to be mostly about my mother because, you know, like I said, my father left. I was about 4 or 5 years old. He walked out. And so really it was all on my mom, you know, to kind of deal with me. And I don't think I was the easiest person to deal with as a kid either, based on what I know from my own son, right? And so sometimes I look back and I think, oh my gosh, that poor woman did this all on her own. It was not just me either, it was two other kids and stuff. And so in a lot of ways, a lot of the things that I'm about to tell you that my mother did, you know, she did from a place of extreme stress and extreme difficulty, extreme suffering, right? And this goes to show that, you know, like the saying goes, hurt people, right? So she was hurt and she hurt me. Okay. And so one of the earliest examples of this was, you know, I I remember, you know, well, first of all, it was constantly hitting me, constantly. Never like with a belt, never with an object that would leave welts or marks or anything like this, but it was constant hand slapping, you know, and not just constant hand slapping, but it was specifically, I think it was clear to me pretty early on that the way that my mom used to hit me and the intensity that it used to have, even though it wasn't intense in terms of like damage, but just like wailing on me, you know. And the reason for that, and I realized this at an early age, I couldn't articulate it, but I realized it, that she was hitting me out of an abundance of frustration and rage in herself, right? So it had little to do with me and had everything to do with her and thinking that she was making herself feel better by hitting me this way. And so in that way, the hitting became very ragey, you know? So it was like not just one or two hits. It was like 15, 16, just bang, 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 you know? So that was all the time. Like that was everywhere, in front of my friends, in the playground, in the elevator, at school, wherever, right? That was just flip a coin whether that was going to happen or not on any given time, right? And so there was an underlying trauma to that, right? Because again, and what happens is, and this is where trauma, this is what I meant, why, you know, if we don't have the support to help us through an experience, that's where we experience trauma, right? And so when your mother, right? The person who is the one person in the universe that is supposed to care for you no matter what, right? When she's doing that to you, you have two choices, right? You can either say, well, this person who I think, you know, is above everyone else in the whole universe to me, well, she's really a terrible person, right? Which a young child cannot possibly think that about their mother. They just can't. They just can't connect those two thoughts, right? That this person can be at once the one person in the world who's all for me and at the same time be the person who's trying to hurt me. A child can't resolve that. So therefore, the child resorts to the next sort of thing, which is, I must be a bad person. I must be so horrible that I deserve this, right? And so every time I was beaten, that's what I was thinking. That's what, and that then, because it happened in my developmental stages of my life, that became my personality, that I'm just not worthy. I'm not good enough. I'm inadequate. I deserve to be punished. I deserve to fail. I deserve this. I deserve all of it. And to this day, I struggle with that. Now, of course, as you all know, I have worked over the last almost 10 years now, you know, cultivating practices to help me to deal with this, right? But it's there. And even to this day, there are moments where it comes up and I get stuck with it. And so I need you to know that too, because maybe you're dealing with some of that in your life, right? It's not your fault. It wasn't my fault, right? All right. So that was just sort of like everyday kind of thing that would happen. And I do mean every day. It was literally like on a daily basis, I would get hit like that. Then there were some standout moments, right? One of which, you know, I'm trying to figure out which one to tell first. So one thing that she used to always do, right, is, you know, me and my sisters would be, you know, doing the thing that little kids do, right? And she would just get so angry and so frustrated with us that she would say to us all the time, she would say to us, one of these days I'm going to go out for a pack of cigarettes and I'm never coming back. Now, just those words, right? So now, of course, to the 7-year-old that I was when she was saying that, or 8 years old or 10 years old, whatever it was, you know, that meant that every time I was separate from her, I never knew if I was ever going to see her again, right? So our words matter, right? They really matter. And I know, like, looking back on it, I know she was just blowing off steam, right? But it was that threat. And that caused this fracture because, again, she's the only one in my life who can support me. And here it is. This person is talking about leaving me like my dad already left me. So that's traumatizing. Traumatizing because she didn't, you know, and for all you parents out there, if you say something like that, that's okay, right? Like, I mean, it's not okay, but it's also doesn't have to be traumatizing, right? As Dr. Dan Siegel just told me yesterday in a class I'm taking with him, he said, and he didn't just say it to me, he said it to the whole thing. It's, yeah, it's online, it's millions of people attending this thing, but he said that when parents flip their lids, when we lose composure and we say things that we don't mean to, the most vital thing then is to come back to the child and connect again, right? And, you know, acknowledge your fault, acknowledge the damage that you did, and try to heal in the moment. It's hugely important because that's the difference between trauma and not trauma. So one of the other things that she used to do was my mom was highly stressed. And again, when I look back, I won't take too much time with this, but when I look back, I know that her parents were very stressed and their parents were probably very stressed. So this was just something that was in my mom, just the way that she is. And now she's very, very sick. And she's sick because of the stress, right? She has Parkinson's disease, which is something that there are scientists now that are saying this is almost definitely a result of stress, prolonged chronic stress, right? So in her just, and again, she was stressed her whole life, right? And so one of the things she used to do is bite her, not her fingernails, because she used to paint her fingernails and all that stuff, but bite the sides of her finger. I could see her. That's like the image I always have of my mom, right? You know, just doing that, right? And so I remember one time, again, I was maybe 6-7 years old or something like that, and my sisters and I were in the living room and doing something causing or triggering her stress somehow, right, which wasn't our fault. It was all in her. And she held out her fingers, and they're bleeding and scabby and just so nasty, and she's like, look at what you're doing to me. I'm not going to have any fingers anymore, and it's going to be your fault. You think I carried that with me a little bit? And then moving on to on the greatest hits list. There's only two more that I'm going to tell you. And this one was, I used to tell this story and laugh about it. And I used to think, well, it was very effective and it worked. And, you know, but when I would tell this story to people, like when I went away to college and I would tell people this story, they're looking at me like, your mom did that to you? So one day we're on our way to, I think, driving to my grandparents' house, which is about maybe an hour or so away in Long Island, where we lived in the city. And we're driving along, I think it was on the Southern State Parkway. And, you know, my sisters and I, as kids, you know, when you have three kids under 8 or 9 years old, there's going to be fighting. There's going to be bickering. I don't care what family you're in. It's bound to happen, right? And well, at least for most families, maybe some families don't, but any family I've ever been exposed to is going to happen, right? And it was happening, right? And so my mother, you know, she's lost all patience for it. She pulled the car over in this little like pull out thing that they have on the side. It wasn't a rest stop. It wasn't any place to get help or anybody else around. It was just literally just a little patch of the road on the side of the road where you could pull off, basically on a shoulder, right? And she said, "Get out. Get out of the car. I've warned you over and over and over, and now it's time. Get out of the car." And she and my sisters, two sisters and me, my little sister at that point was maybe 3 years old, right? She holding my hand, shaking. As we're standing there outside the car, and my mother, I think she might have had to like actually pull the door closed, right? And she drove off. And she only drove like maybe 200 yards away and then backed back up, right? But like hearing those tires, you know, and the gravel and going, it's like we're alone. And even though it lasted only, you know, maybe 30 seconds, maybe even less, for those 30 seconds, my sisters and I were orphans, right? We were completely alone in the entire universe, and we had no idea what was going to happen. Now, again, it's not something that my mother, later on that day, she didn't have the emotional intelligence to now, you know, connect with us and explain what happened and support us through understanding this. That equals trauma. And now last on the greatest hits list was the math book. Yeah. So I was terrible in school, right? And I mean, it's all attached. You know, I look back, I'm like, of course I was terrible in school. Look at the childhood I had. I was freaking out all the time. How could you possibly go to learn? You can't learn in this situation because I was constantly stressed, constantly afraid. And so I was chronically a bad student all the way through till you know, college. I was chronically a bad student. Now I'm not, ironically. Like now if I went back to school, I'd be an A student, right? But throughout my educational career, terrible student. Always in trouble, always getting bad grades, oh, the whole thing, right? And so there was one, I'm going to say I was probably in third grade. I'm just guessing somewhere second through fourth grade or something like that, somewhere in there. And I came home and, you know, my mom says, "Where's your report card?" You know, and of course I, you know, and again, I see my son doing it. So I'm like, sure. Like I did exactly that. Right. Where I said, "I don't know." Right. With my book bag at my feet. Right. "I don't know." Just stalling and trying not to get her to look at my failing grades. And so she grabbed my book bag and she finds the report card and she looks, "Oh, Art, how could you?" And she got so mad, right? She took out my math textbook, right? Which is, I mean, you know, in my memory, it was like this big, you know? But it was a textbook, a New York City public education textbook. It was probably that fat, and it was 8.5 by 11, maybe 9 by 12, a big book, right? And she took that book, and I was standing no more than 8 to 10 feet away from her, right? And it's not like she took, like I've done this in my life, right? Where it's not like she took the book and just slammed it or threw it against the wall and it bounced and happened to come near me or something like that. No, 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 my friends. She looked me in the eye with this face, this look of absolute contempt that I can call it up in my memory. Of course, my memory is not exact and, you know, it's not a, you know, point for point representation, but what I can remember is this scorn, this contempt on her face. And she took that book and she threw it overhand as hard as she possibly could. And it was aimed right at my head, like literally right at my face, my 8-year-old little face. thanks to my reflexes, I moved out of the way and I was not damaged by it, but she absolutely meant harm. I'll give you one other little story before I go into the real kind of point that brings all this back around and really the educational point of this whole thing. But one other story that was actually not so much my mom, but gives me an understanding of how all this happened, right? Was one time when I was about maybe 10 or 12 years old. And like any other 10 or 12 year old, I was very much a wise ass and had lots of nasty things to say to my mother at any given time, right? And my grandparents were over, her parents were over, and we were eating dinner, and I said something, and my grandfather was like, "What did you say to my daughter?" And I was like, whoa. And my mom was like, go to your room right now, go to your room, like that kind of freaking out. And she's like, "Lock the door." I ran, you know, into my room. And thankfully, we lived in we were in New York City, and the apartment complex where we lived, it was like mid-income kind of complex. And it was all built to be fallout shelters back in the post-war days and stuff like that. And so the doors were metal, right? They had big metal, deadbolts and stuff. So as much as he tried, he could not break the door down. And I mean that. My grandfather was pounding on that door saying, "You get your ass out of here. I'm going to beat the ba, 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 ba." My mother screaming, "Don't open the door. Don't open the door." Saying, "Daddy, you're scaring me." Again, one of the most traumatic experiences of my life. And that one never even touched me, right? I literally never even was damaged by that one physically, right? But yeah, I had to sit in my room for like hours until he calmed down and finally left. And so the reason I tell you that story, a little bonus track here, is that that's where my mom got it from. You know, he treated her that way throughout her entire childhood. So that's the way she learned how to process her anger. Right? It's no mystery. Like, it's obvious. And so I say that to you because if you had parents like that, like I did, that's where I have to constantly, moment to moment correction, I have to constantly check myself with my own children. You know, I'll tell you stories about my dad some other time because we're out of time here, but my dad was not so much ragey and violent, but he was just always insulting, just always putting me down, always making me feel like I was just not worth anything. And that's after leaving me, right? So I have to be very careful of this. I know that my tendency is to talk that way to my children. My tendency is going to be to lose my patience and my temper with my children. And because I know that that's where I came from and that's where my parents came from, now I can watch for it and I can moment by moment correct for it. All right, so now I know that this is getting long. I usually try to keep these podcasts around 30 minutes, and we're already over that. But one quick last point here, okay? In 1997, December 7th, 1997, it's only December 7th because it was about 4 o'clock in the morning when it happened. Otherwise, most people call it December 6th. It was Friday night. I was out with my hockey team. We went to a Rangers game on a New York Rangers game. And, you know, that's the professional hockey team in New York City. And it was a Friday night at Madison Square Garden. And they were playing the Toronto Maple Leafs. Like, it had all the fixings. And that game was tied. It was we were down by one goal until 0.6 seconds left in the game and we tied it up. I thought the building was going to come down the way this the crowd was just raging, right? And so after the game, and then we won it in overtime, and after that game we went out to this bar and that bar and this bar and that bar, just like 8 guys just drinking, as you know, trying to drink New York City dry, just trying to drink all the beer and whiskey we could. And I was so drunk, right? And when I went home, I still don't know to this day whether they followed me or whether they were inside the building already. The lock to the front door was broken, right? And then there was a gate at the top of the stairs that was not broken, okay? And so I had to open that gate, right? And I remember, and I do think that they followed me because I was up at the top of the landing and I was trying to open the gate all drunk and these two guys came in. And I think they must have seen me stop to buy cigarettes and saw the big, you know, wad of cash I had in my pocket. I had cashed my paycheck. I had something like $1,000 in my pocket at this point. And they came up and they, you know, I was, you know, I tried to fight them. And so they stabbed me. They threw me down the stairs. They stomped me. They beat me. They literally left me. My face looked like hamburger meat. The stabbing actually cut the artery in my leg. And so I literally, like, before I could even look up from having been stabbed, looking up, I could feel the blood in my shoe, right? That much blood. I lost, I think it was like 8 pints of blood that I lost. Okay, literally, I was that close to needing a transfusion. And they left me there for dead inside this dirty, squalid, you know, downtown apartment building, right? And I literally had to get out. The only way I could survive, and I knew this, even in that drunken, damaged, brain-damaged haze, I knew that the only way I was going to survive is to get outside. It's 4 a.m. And if I don't get out to that street and some car hopefully pull over, I'm going to die here in this stairwell, right? And so I did. I crawled my way out to the street. I actually got myself halfway into the street and I lost consciousness. I have no idea what happened after except for what people told me. And the person who saw me happened to be an off-duty EMS guy, right? Who had the first aid kit, the big orange, you know, tackle box thing in his trunk. And he was able to stabilize me until the fire department with the ambulance got there. And I do remember being rolled over by the firemen. And when I breathed, they all went, whoa, like three guys. Like that's how much liquor I had in me, right? And so from there, they took me to Bellevue Hospital. I spent 7 days in the intensive care unit, right? I actually, the next morning, the wound actually opened back up and I was laying in a pool of my own blood. And they had to actually, in that moment, it was like crash cart thing, like, you know, like alarms going off. And there were 4 nurses, right, holding down each limb. Right, one on each leg, one on each arm and shoulder, and holding me down so that the doctor could wheel over on this stool that he had. And so he's on the level of my leg, and he literally took 2 clamps and just bam, right into this open wound in my leg. I have never felt pain like that in my life. That's why 4 people had to hold me down. I would never have been, they would not have been able to hold me down, 1 person with that pain. So I went through all that. The emergency surgery, the stitches, the side of my leg looked like a football, right? Like the laces on a football. And I tell you that story because you can see how violent that was, and much more violent than anything that my mother or father or combined did to me, right? But here's the thing. In the aftermath of that, I had counseling. I had a girlfriend who I lived with at the time, right? I had support. I had friends. I had, you know, I was an adult, so I had adult friends who were there to support me through this experience. And so I was not traumatized at all by this experience, even though it was so much harder, so much more violent, so much more damaging than anything my parents ever did to me. I carry so much trauma from my parents, and I don't carry any trauma from that. None. So anyway, folks, I hope this helped you. Again, I didn't want to do this, but you asked, and I hope it helps you to hear this. And if you have any questions, okay, if you'd like to talk about any of this, if you'd like to share any thoughts, okay, you can either email me at art@artburnscoaching.com or book a call and let's talk. Okay, because maybe you want to talk more about what's happened in your life. You know, maybe something I said today inspired something. Or maybe it created questions. Whichever the case, I'm here for you, okay? Again, I'm not somebody who's going to go back and help you make sense of that. There are trained professionals who can help you do that. And I will help you to find one if you cannot, okay? I can do that for you as a coach. But my thing is giving you the tools to handle the trauma, to live with it, and to move forward in healing, okay? But in order to truly heal from trauma, you got to address the trauma. And that you require a professional for. Not a coach, a psychologist, a therapist, a psychiatrist, a counselor. All right? Well, thank you for hearing me out. I know this is a very long podcast today. I think where are we here? Oh, I stopped the clock. Anyway, so I'm sure we're at almost 40 minutes now. So anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. I wish you well. I'll be back again tomorrow with a little bit of a, I guess you could say, a more lighthearted subject. What are we going to talk about tomorrow? We're going to talk about... we're just going to talk about some neuroplasticity, which is good stuff, right? Nice and unbiased science. So anyway, thanks for listening. I wish you well, and I hope that my stories help you in some way. All right, take care, everybody. Bye-bye.